Welcome to the Hot Stove Society Radio Show on Cairo Radio. I'm Tom Douglas, chef owner of several of Seattle's fine little joints here in town, including the Sirius Pie downtown between 3rd and 4th on Virginia, Seatown Restaurant, the north end of the Pike Place Market, and our Hot Stove Society show right here at the Hotel Andra. And the last thing I've got going on is Sirius Takeout in Ballard at 52nd and 14th Northwest. Glad that you could join us. We've got a big show for you today. Chef Terry is planning to be back next week for the radio show. He's taking Christmas off. Looking forward to having him back in his customary microphone spot here at the Hot Stove Show. In the meantime, Maddie Dow is going to take over his... Are you going to take over his spot, or are you just going to sit there and stare at me while I take over?
Stare and comment and relentlessly. Comment.
This is Madeline's last show, so she's very feisty today. I'm looking forward to the beatdown that I'm going to take here, because we all know that I used to win trivia all the time until Madeline took over the show.
That's right. I'm coming up with some hard questions
and decided that I would never win again. Last week I was 5 for 5, though. I'm just saying.
That's true.
We have such a large show today, I don't even think I can get it all in. It's the last show of 2020, so we're going to talk a little bit about... you had asked me to come up with my favorite taste of the year, and I just decided I miss my restaurants so much that I'm going to come up with the favorite taste of each of the restaurants that I owned, in past tense, that I owned that are closed. And until they can reopen, I'm going to miss these bites tremendously.
I love that.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Good. And then, of course, Brian Miletus is here of Fat Cork. It's an annual tradition to have him in to talk about what grower champagnes are in his house right now over there on the base of Queen Anne, or what even fancy champagnes that he thinks that we should be drinking. Our favorite Pass It Down segment returns. Did you find someone?
I am so excited about this one. This one was our wonderful Washington Post writer, Becky Crystal. She wrote this beautiful piece that was actually in the Seattle Times as well, about a mystery cake that her grandfather was passing down. And unfortunately, he passed away this year. And she sort of went on a quest over the last couple months to figure out, cracked the deliciousness code, is what she said, which
I love.
Isn't
that cool?
So we're going to give her a call and have her tell the story, which is
great.
Awesome.
Well, you know, that Pass It Down, it's very touching when people take it seriously and think about it. I did a corporate event here at the Hot Stove a few weeks ago, and in planning for the event, I had said, you know, I love this idea that recipes aren't a list of ingredients and a list of directions, that they're a slice of your family, right? They are some of your lore, your history. And I suggested to him that he get his team together, because everyone was working remote.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you create camaraderie when you're working remote in that way? So I said, why don't you have everyone donate a recipe to a company cookbook, but they have to tell the story where the recipe came from. And so during the class, I picked one recipe and I made it by their directions. And it was a young woman whose father had passed this summer. And it was all a surprise to them, and she didn't know, and she just burst out into tears.
Oh, I love it.
She was so thankful. Sure. I didn't mean to embarrass her or anything, but, you know, recipes have a lot of raw emotion to them.
Yeah, totally.
And they will bring memories to your table for years and years and years to come. So looking forward to that from Becky Crystal. Xiao Ching Chow, one of our instructors here and also a fabulous cookbook author, is going to be on the show today. She's got a new book. I'm trying to find her other one here so I can... Her first book is called Chinese Soul Food. And it's been a big seller here at the Hot Stove and online. And then she's got a new one out with Chinese vegetables, the vegetarian Chinese soul food. So I'm looking forward to having her on and chatting about that. She's a good interview. We'll chat about the best finger food options for your countdown to 2021. And, of course, man, this show is packed, Madeline. Glory Antonio Arellano is going to be here from Seattle Team Feed. And, you know, we support this every year. Chef Nate was the one who kind of got us started down on Teen Feed, and then the chefs over, including Ron Anderson over at, and Scott White over at Cuoco, kind of took up the mantle when Nate went on to become an electrician.
Yep.
Instead of chefing. So we're going to talk a little bit about Teen Feed today. And, of course, Xiao Ching is going to be here to kick my butt in Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. So, favorite taste of the week. What is something that I enjoyed this week? Oh, there's so many. Jackie made her fabulous... fruit bars again. And so she's made, this is her third batch. These fruit bars are unbelievable. You make like a cookie sheet full, you know, one of those nice restaurant we call half sheet pans. There you have a nice little about a 1-inch lip on them. And she makes a cookie sheet full of the fruit. I mean, the fruit bars. It takes 7 pounds of fruits and nuts
really?
For one cookie sheet.
It's a workout.
Oh, my God. And she had to cut all of those. Of course, marinate them in booze. She just uses Applejack. But anything, it's the good time to clean out the freezer of all your nuts and dried fruits out of the drawer for the year. Get them all cut up, get them all marinated, and then ready to go for these fruit bars. And I got to tell you, I think people think I'm a freak because I love fruitcake. And these bars have just the right amount of dough. Fruitcake sometimes doesn't have enough batter for me, right? But these bars have the perfect amount of dough. And don't tell anyone, but you might be getting some for Christmas.
I can't wait. I'm excited. Well, she's going to have to share her recipe because I think those fruit bars are great all year round, too.
So they are. They are delicious.
And
okay, we have 1 minute left, Maddie. Tell me where you're going and what your job future holds for you. People want to know what's going on with Maddie Dow.
Oh, I'm sad to leave. I'm going to miss this show and miss the whole team, but I am heading up just to the top of Capitol Hill. I'm the marketing communications director for Seattle Academy. Yeah, for CHOP and no, for Seattle Academy, Seattle Academy of Arts and Sciences. I will be there. I'm super excited to join the team. It's a great school, grades 6 through 12 up there. And, you know, I've always been passionate about schools and talking about schools. I think Seattle is a city that is unique in that world. And we have so many different types of schools. And Seattle Academy is going to be awesome for that. And
yeah, that's where my daughter went to school. As you know, you went to UPrep, but my daughter went to Seattle Academy.
My sister went to Seattle Academy. And so we had some connections up there. And they were looking for someone to take over this job, and as much as I love you, it's going to be sad to leave. But something.
How many years have you been here?
Exciting things. Maybe 6 years.
6 years. Wow.
I know.
Cool.
Just when the business started.
You know, there is some rumor going around that the only reason you're going is that you get free tuition for your two kids.
Not true. I wish it was the case, but it's not true. Sadly.
Oh, come
not.
On, come.
I'm
going to
miss all the free family meal food here. That's the best part. I mean,
yeah,
that's
actually
the biggest
the
perk here, for sure. Going downstairs and just seeing what's in the oven and taking little bites, that's what I'm going to miss the most.
Well, we are certainly, when you come around, we are all hands on deck for many things that a lot of communication directors and public relations directors don't get to do, right? It's all hands on deck when it's Christmas time. You got to get out there and hand out Christmas boxes or sweep the dock or whatever it is. So you've been awesome, and we are going to miss you terribly.
Thank you.
Amy, who's here today sitting in, your co-producer, is going to take over for a while until we find our permanent solution. So,
and I get to roast her today for trivia. She's going to play you and Xiaoqing.
Oh, nice. I like it. Up next, it's the Fat Cork. Brian Melitas is here, and we're going to talk about what you should be drinking in the new year or for the new year. On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Hot Stove Society Show. Once again, Terry's got the day off, but we've got a big show planned anyway. Can't, got to keep rolling, right, Madeline?
Right.
Who do we have up next? Brian here is from the Fat Cork, Brian Melitas.
Yeah,
you like Melitas or Melitas, Brian?
Melitas, but I've been called Melitas my whole life.
All right, so your shop is down there on the base of Queen Anne. I've been in.
Yep.
I haven't been in probably a year, is my guess. But I've always enjoyed my stroll through there. It's a good time. But you have a good online presence too, don't you?
Oh yeah, we ship all over the country using FedEx and UPS, and we are specific to Champagne. So that's all we do is a Champagne tasting room during non-COVID times, and a retailer all the time. My wife and I started this 12 years ago now. Going and visiting small growers in the Champagne region of France and importing their champagnes directly to the United States. So grower champagne, as I just mentioned, is different than some of the bigger branded champagnes that many people are familiar with in the supermarket. And that's because these champagnes are grown by the grape growers themselves and made into their own cuvées in much smaller quantities. So very similar to what micro beers would be to bigger domestic beer brands.
So let's kind of explain that just one step further. So in my mind, a grower of champagne, generally the grower uses, we'll just say, his own grapes from his own vineyards. He understands the vineyards and has had them and been growing on them for many, many years. And that, like a big house, like, say, Roederer or Veuve Clicquot or somebody like that, has a group of growers that grow grapes for them, and maybe they're under contract, maybe not. But then they make a champagne in the style that they like. That's their kind of their flavor profile, and that's what they try to get to every year.
Yeah, we call them big houses, or if you want to be appropriate, and the French would call them the maisons. And those are some of the brands that you mentioned. They source from thousands of growers in the Champagne region, and it's Champagne region is unique to all the other regions that I know of for wine producers, in that there's a symbiotic relationship between the houses and the growers. There's over 19,000 growers in Champagne. And 15,000 of them just grow the grapes and they sell them to the big houses. And there's a lot to do there with the economics of champagne. It's very expensive to make champagne. First, you have to make a great base wine, and then can you start the process of making champagne, which takes years. And in our case, we don't import champagnes that have had less than 3 years in the caves of the growers. So there's a lot of time and money involved, and that's why most of the growers in Champagne simply grow the grapes, and they work on contracts, as you mentioned, to sell those grapes to the larger houses, which then go and make their own house style of champagne. They want to be consistent from year to year so that the Moët Chandon bottle that you have from year and year is always the same, mm-hmm. or consistently the same, and that's their value proposition. The difference with the growers, as I mentioned a little bit similarly to microbeer, is that you get very different flavor profiles based on where that grower is, what that year brings to their grape crop, and how they go about vinifying their wine. So you get more individuality with the grower champagnes, and you get more consistency with the big house champagne.
Yeah, so you have to do a little work, a taste around to see what grower champagnes fit your personal taste buds when it comes to champagne.
Yeah, it's really hard work going and tasting champagne around.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the dream of our business, Fat Corp. That was the dream 12 years ago. I went to the UW Business School and was fortunate there and went to the business plan competition, and actually remember getting rejected from that going into the final 16. And one professor wrote up something and said, this is a dream business. This can't actually work. And that actually served as fuel for me to go out and make it work. But talking about going and visiting those growers, what a wonderful experience. And when we first went there, the growers told my wife and I that Americans like sweet champagne. And I don't know where they got this concept from, but we said, actually, we would like you guys to make drier champagne specifically for us. And so what I love in champagne, all champagnes, is a very delicate citrus and a mineral flavor. And when you get a sweeter champagne, that can sometimes be masked mm-hmm. by the sugar levels. Now, there's always a place for sweet champagne, but what we do specifically at Fat Cork is dry champagne, which is the word Brut. You'll see Brut on many labels of champagne, and that actually refers to a dry champagne. It was actually given as a moniker to the English when the English would come down to the Champagne region and request a drier champagne. They were the English Brutes, mm-hmm. And that name stuck as something that refers to a drier champagne. And if you want even drier than Brut, there's different levels of champagne called Extra Brut or even Brut Nature. And that's what my wife and I really love. We love the Brut Natures, which have very, very little to zero sugar in them. They're harder to find, but you can find them in any, you know, all of our great wine stores, Pike and Western, McCarthy and Shearing, even any of our great supermarkets with wine stewards. If you go in and ask for a Brut Nature champagne, they'll know what you're talking about. And if we talk about pairings, that to me, those are the most beautiful pairings, because the champagne doesn't get in the way of the food. So like Olympia oysters that we have running up and down the West Coast, when we're fortunate to find them, great pairing with Brut Nature champagne. Also, you know, simple nigiri sushi or simple sushi rolls. And then one of my favorite pairings, a decadent pairing, if you can get a little bit older champagne, an aged champagne, or a Blanc de Blanc champagne, which means it's made with all Chardonnay grapes, and you pair that with a Dungeness crab with some butter. Really a decadent, wonderful experience.
Sounds lovely. Okay, so our listeners are desperate to have a couple of brand names from your site. Give us maybe the low-end value proposition. We only have about a minute. The low-end value champagne on your site right now, and maybe if they want to splurge for a Brut Nature or a Via Vin, an old vine champagne. We only have about a minute, though.
Yeah, well, we Jiminet Auger, or Jiminet Auger, if you want to pronounce it in the English style, is a great intro-level value champagne, Blanc de Blanc style champagne. It's a Brut, but it still is very dry. And then if you want to try a Brut Nature, we have got many, many different styles, but Jean Bayette Prudhomme, a sixth-generation female grower. Lorraine Bayette is her name, and she makes a wonderful Brut Nature.
I just want to drink champagne this morning, Tom.
I want to drink champagne right now.
That's so good.
It's been Brian Miletus of the his business is called The Fat Cork, or just Fat Cork. And if you want to go to his website, I'm sure it's right online. You can find it. And Brian, if you would save me maybe three bottles of that, the older one that you just mentioned. Now I can't think of the name because you put it in both English and in French.
Your book, I don't know what it was called. I think it's Tom's Big Dinner Book or the Big Man. You have a comment in there about barbecue and champagne, rosé champagne, I think, specifically. And I would encourage all listeners to go out there and try it. It is one of the best suggestions. I came across it a decade ago, and I still refer to it.
But I love it.
Awesome.
Pairing barbecue with champagne.
All right, go check out the Fat Cork online and say hi to Brian for me. He's saving me some bubbles. Up next, we have the best of 2020. I'm going to get a little emotional here when I next segment because I'm going to talk about the food I miss most from our restaurants that are no longer serving. It's the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo. I'm Tom Douglas. Chef Terry's lazy butt taking another day off. Here we are going to jump right into our favorite dishes from 2020. And why don't we start with Terry? Terry texted you a few of his thoughts on 2020. What did you hear from him?
It's true. He has quite the range of food here, Tom. I love his, if I could read it in his beloved accent, but one of his favorite bites of 2020 was Vegemite. In Australia, in Melbourne. He went to Sunda Restaurant, which was the best restaurant he dined in Australia. He was back there in February before we all closed down, and had a Vegemite crispy cake that was absolutely delicious. It was the first time that he tried it, and he said he was not disappointed. So that was a top on his list.
That is so weird that would be his Chef Terry's favorite bite, but whatever. Who am I to say? I didn't have it.
He did say, he said the most surprising for him, mainly because he does not normally eat pizza, was when Serious Pie reopened across the street from Mandra here at Serious Pie downtown. Mm-hmm. He went on a Friday afternoon. He went four Fridays in a row, he said, eating pizza like a child who had never had it before but suddenly fell in love with the dish. So surprising, but the experience of rediscovering how those pies are so well executed and reminding me of what bad pizza is, but rather the craftsmanship when well done can create. And he said, you should be very proud, Tom, of the team. He absolutely loves Serious Pie. And his last favorite bite, he forgot to mention he wanted me to make sure that he gave a shout out to his beloved wife, Kathy. Her chocolate chip cookies, fresh, 10 minutes out of the oven. He says, ho, ho, ho. He says the cookies have oats, raisins, coconut, and chocolate chips, and it is his favorite bite. And I'm sure he's probably eating a couple right now, if I'm not mistaken.
Chump.
So we miss you, Terry. We're glad that you were able to send in your favorite bites. Tom, what do you miss?
Well, I decided I didn't want to like get into, you know, my favorite bites of to-go food for the last 9 months. So I just thought I would talk about, as we kind of go through this, my favorite bites from our own joints that have been closed for 9 months. Mm-hmm. Some never to return, like Cuoco and Brave Horse Tavern, are closed for good. And some that hopefully will return in the spring when there's a new business, like the Carlisle Room across from the Paramount Theater. It doesn't make a ton of sense to open that until the theaters can be open.
Yep.
Because that was our big business driver there. And then, of course, Etta's, maybe not until tourism happens again down in the Pike Place Market. We've got a couple of top things from Etta's on the menu at SeaTown because we combined all three of those restaurants. So let me start, let's say, at the Carlisle Room. And this is going to sound weird, but I had it every time I went there because it's trashy good. And if you know trashy good, that's my highest compliment.
Mm-hmm.
So the chips and dip.
Oh, my favorite.
Yours too?
That ranch, the ranch dressing, Desi's Ranch, is top five favorite things I've had in a long time.
Really? That is, I thought I was going to be like laughed out of the room there. But homemade potato chips, really good ranch. And I love crudités. I love carrot mm-hmm. sticks and celery sticks. And there's just something natural and organic about the whole thing that with my whiskey or my martini, it is the perfect snack for me. I love that. So there's the Carlisle Room. Let's come right down the hill here to, say, Lola, which has been closed now for 9 months. And, of course, I had breakfast there many times before the radio show, before we taped. And I miss our little maple pork sausages and our little goat cheese omelet with herbs. So good. Those are a couple of things in 2021 that I hope will return. But the hotel here is still closed. 9 months later, this hotel at the Andre is still closed. We're here when we tape our show here at the Hot Stove. We are by ourselves in this entire 120-room hotel.
Yep.
So it's kind of crazy.
It's true. I think Lola is probably one of the most email we get in terms of what people miss, and the breakfast items for sure. I think that just, it was a great standard, well-done breakfast spot for downtown. It was always bustling.
Yeah, very businessy.
It was perfect because it was just the perfect, delicious food.
Yeah.
The Lola pancakes, I think, were most favored for much of the emails that we were getting.
Well, one of the things, you know, Amy, who you're co-producer here of this radio show, one of the things I have on my list for her is to start looking at parklets for this spring here on 4th Avenue to try and get some of our restaurants open, because my gut instinct is we're not going to be open indoors for quite a while.
Yeah.
Maybe till April or May. That's just my instinct. I have no idea. No inside information. So, yeah, love that. Whether or not the Dahlia reopens, questionable. You know, that's a big restaurant, and I just don't see the need for a 150-seat restaurant right now. But I could see it turning into the Dahlia Bakery. And when I think about what I miss most at the Dahlia Bakery, there's one cookie that I really love, and Terry loves chocolate chip cookies.
Yep.
And the owner here of the Hotel Andre loves our chocolate chunk cookie, but I am the little coconut French meringue, not macaroon, but the French meringue. And if you've had macaroons, if you've had them like in a Jewish deli, or if you have them in most grocery stores where you buy them off the shelf, they're these really dense, heavy coconut things. Sometimes they're half dipped in chocolate, and I do not like them.
They sometimes taste stale to me, too.
They always taste stale. I mean, honestly,
a stale tart sort of texture that I've never.
But the one that I'm talking about, and maybe we'll put the recipe up on our Facebook page. It takes time. It takes some effort, but it's worth doing. But they don't last. You have to eat them pretty much within 24 hours of making them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got coconut, but it's just got a light meringue that holds it together.
Mm.
And so it's like a combo cookie of a little cloud-like meringue with some coconut in it. I really love those, and I miss those from our bakery tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
Where else do we need to go? Serious Pies open right around the corner, so we don't have to talk about that. Although if I had to have my last pie at Serious Pie, what would yours be?
Oof. I think I would have to do, yeah, the margarita.
The margarita?
Just the classic.
Yeah. I'm more of
maybe an add pepperoni secret menu item.
That is not on the menu.
I know that, but it's a secret. We always have pepperoni.
We're not supposed to be serving pepperoni unless we make it ourselves.
No. But what about around the corner to Cantina?
Oh, Cantina Lena. Shoo. The frozen margaritas are pretty hot. the slushies are pretty darn good. You know, everyone loved the nachos there, and I'm just not a nacho person, so it's not something that I crave. But pozole is something I crave. Oh, I love perfect pozole, and we got ours right most of the time. But I had to go back to the kitchen many times and say, you know, this needs more. You know what I found that it needed most? More pork fat. You know, a lot of times when you make soup, everyone is so conscious of taking, like, skimming off all the fat. Mm. And it's like chicken noodle soup. You know, a lot of times it's just broth and there's not a lick of chicken fat kind of up on the top of the sheen is gone.
Yep.
It needs it. I think it really needs it. And then Maria, our tortilla maker there, made fresh tortillas, and I would just eat the soup, take a bite of a warm tortilla,
A sip of a frozen margarita.
And that, to me, was king, heaven on earth.
Ugh, so good.
And, you know, we used to, right across the street at the Big M, was a big place for our team to kind of go from, get out of any of our joints. And Amy Richardson sitting over there was a big French fry queen at the Big M.
That is the Margot, the Big M that people are looking, wondering in the Hotel Warwick there. Yeah. It's a great secret spot. Their bar is awesome. And our favorite waitress name is Amy also. And they have terrible Wi-Fi.
You know, Amy, that your favorite waitress, Amy, was my favorite waitress at the 6th Avenue Bar and Grill before it came down for the Amazon buildings. Mm-hmm. And we hired her for a minute at Tanaka-san. But it was too crazy for her. She couldn't do it, deal
with
it.
It's the Big M style.
Yeah. All right. We have Palace Kitchen left, mm-hmm. which, of course, to me is the Pline. A lot of people love the wings there, but the Pline, the P-L-I-N, the little pinch pasta raviolis with slow-roasted pork. It was roasted in milk with chard and Swiss cheese and like an Emmenthaler cheese. Really good. Miss that terribly. And Miss Martha, who made it for 27 years.
Yep, that was our number one thing we had to have at our wedding, Tom. It was a craveable item that we could not get married without, having all of our guests eat Pline, which drove your catering team crazy because it's not something that's easy to serve at a big wedding.
It's so hard because it's just butter as the sauce. And when it's cold, it's cold.
It's cold, yeah. But it is our favorite food. For sure.
What am I missing? Well, of course, the Tanaka-san group, you know, the assembly hall is all gone already, and I miss those chicken wings terribly. Cuoco, the tagliarini, you know, the thin sliced fresh egg pasta with sage butter, really good. Brave Horse Tavern.
Ugh.
I could sit down and eat a pretzel platter any time.
So good.
I love those pretzels.
Yeah. You know, one quick thing before walking back up to Palace Kitchen, a nice thing, we do get a lot of people craving that Palace Kitchen burger, the Burger Royale.
Yeah.
People are in luck for that because on New Year's Eve, we are going to be doing a Burger Royale pop-up at Sirius Takeout in Ballard, a royal send-off to 2020. So on New Year's Eve, December 31st, from 12 to 9 p.m., I believe, we're going to be staying up late, and the Palace Kitchen jumpsuits are coming back to the grill there on the dock, and we're going to be making some delicious burgers with just that melty Beecher's cheese, a little bit of French fries.
Wow, you got to get in early. That sold out last time so fast.
So get online.
And if you want to come see me on New Year's Eve instead of going to the dock, you can come down to Seatown, and I'll be shucking 2020 some oysters, and I'll have lots of little shucking specials.
Yeah, who's going to sell more?
Don't send me a letter. That's S-H-U-C-K-I-N-G. I'm shucking oysters, possibly shucking some crab, and we're shucking 2020.
Like it.
All right. Up next, Pass It Down. It's my favorite little segment. We're going to talk about one that really spoke to you, Madeline.
Yep.
On Cairo Radio, it's the Hot Stove Society Show at 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show. I'm Tom Douglas. I'm not flying solo today. I've got Madeline in the house and Amy Richardson. My wife Jackie just showed up. She's going to co-host for the second hour. And we're going to get right into a Pass It Down segment that As you have, those of you who have listened to the show for quite a while know, this is one of my favorite segments where we talk about recipes that are passed down through the family and that come with so much more than just a list of ingredients and a list of direction. They come with a little slice of your life. You're actually bearing your soul a bit when you make these recipes, and I love that. And so, Madeline, you talked to a friend of ours who I think I did an interview with about biscuits.
Yeah, last year. Yeah, Becky Crystal. Hi, Becky. You're on the line, and we're excited to have you on the air to talk about, I believe, a mystery that she cracked is what.
And this was I saw it in the Seattle Times, and this is from the Washington Post, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Let Becky give a little background, but I did want to think. I love your quote. I think you should share your quote that you like about recipe boxes. I did share it with Becky, and I think it sort of rounds out, though morbid slightly, rounds out our pass it down segment pretty well.
Well, the whole idea of where this started years ago was that I collect vintage recipe boxes on eBay or wherever, but I look for ones that have recipes that are still in the box, like somebody got it at a garage sale, and that each recipe's got notes from the person who's made that recipe.
It's so fun.
And so my theory is you can't let the recipe box die with you. You have to then take that and pass it on to your kids or to a neighbor or whoever, and enjoy that recipe and enjoy the history.
Yeah.
So there it is.
Lovely. Becky, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Give us a little background. Tell us about this apple and pear cake recipe that you love so much.
Yeah. It's you know, both kind of funny and sad. My grandfather died in April. He was 100. And he and my grandmother, who died all the way back in 1985 when I was really little, did a lot of cooking and baking. And I don't even remember when. At some point when I was just learning how to cook, maybe I sat down with my mom's folder of recipes. A lot of them were in my grandfather's handwriting mostly. And so I just sat with the scanner and copied them all, thinking I should have these for someday, right? And a couple of months ago, it was that someday. I was looking for something new to bake. I obviously still really heartbroken about losing my grandfather in this really difficult year. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to look at the family recipes and try to find something that appeals to me right now. And I came across this recipe, which was in my grandfather's handwriting, and the name was Aunt Dora's Fruit and Nut Cake. And this raised a number of questions, including who is Aunt Dora? We never figured that out. And what is this cake? It sounds great. And so from there, I started testing it and trying it out.
That's awesome. I love that. And did you? And so we still don't know who Aunt Dora is, but you were able to figure out all the ingredients.
Yeah, the ingredients are all there. I mean, it was one of my friends said it's kind of like a technical challenge on the Great British Baking Show when you get some of these recipes. Things are missing. They're, you know, things might show up in the ingredients and disappear in the instructions, stuff like that. Yeah. And so you know, I'm a pretty competent baker, so I just set about making it, and it worked out really well. I loved it, actually. It was fantastic. I was almost mad that I had never made it before, and kind of sad after the fact, because my mom had told me that my grandfather apparently talked about this cake a lot. It had never come up in conversation that we had had, and my mom is really good at, I don't know, filing things / throwing them away. And she didn't even have this recipe anymore. And she didn't know that I had it. And I didn't know that my grandfather loved it. And I just, it broke my heart a little bit, because I would have made it for him. I had, at various other points when he was around, tried to recreate different recipes that he had talked about or that were in this notebook, but not this one. Mm-hmm. So I did what I could, and I think he would be really pleased with how it came out.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's what's important, right? You know, he would have loved it, and you would have seen that. I'm sure he has a special smile, and you would have what I love about it is that it just draws out the history. His, you know, you would have found out who Aunt Dora is and how they met, and because obviously it's not in your family tree, so how they met, And it could have been. You know, some of these recipes that I have found, it says just as simple as this, Aunt Dora's cake from the Washington Post. You know what I'm saying? It's like some of them, that's where they come from, is right out of a newspaper. It's the title.
It is a truly game of telephone, right? I mean, once things, it's great to have them in the handwriting of your relative, but it also basically leaves zero paper trail, right? Apparently, my grandmother also liked to take classes. It could have been a recipe she got from a class and adapted or whatever. I would love to find out. I even got an email from someone, like a professional genealogist, who said, if you ever want, I would love to help you figure out who Aunt Dora is.
I love it.
I don't even know if that's possible, but now at least it's in the Washington Post online, and presumably it will never die there. So I love that too, that my friends and family, you know, I have this platform that a lot of other people don't. So now it's there for presumably posterity.
Yeah, exactly. And you never know. I mean, the internet is crazy. Some of the stuff I read about myself before the internet even happened is mind-boggling to me.
I love it. Now, Becky, were there some ingredients that you know, that might have been outdated or couldn't find right away? Or what were some of the challenges when trying to recreate it?
Yeah, that was also what was really great about this recipe. We talk a lot about pantry-friendly recipes, especially right now when so many of us are not grocery shopping as often. So everything was really straightforward: flour, oil, like a lot of old-fashioned cakes are. You know, they're oil-based instead of butter, especially if your family's Jewish like mine. You know, you don't necessarily use butter all the time. Apples, nuts. So everything in that respect was really straightforward. I had to figure out a few missing details, which was what pan to make this in. It makes a huge amount of batter, and the recipe just says bake at 350 for an hour. And so I started looking at other recipes, family recipes in the book, and it was very, very similar to this Jewish apple cake, which is another family recipe and probably my favorite food of all time. And I mean, it lined up very similarly, which I'm sure is another part of the mystery I need to figure out. And so I decided, okay, well, that recipe's made in a bundt pan. I'll make it in a bundt pan too. Only after the fact that my mom say, oh, I remember it being made in a 9x13 pan. So I tried both. They both worked great. And the timing, actually, the recipe said an hour. And then there was this great little note in the corner from my grandfather that says, bake more, 981. Yeah, 1981. This is before I was even born. So it was funny. Just so sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My first inclination is it's an Aunt Dory Greenspan recipe.
Yeah, maybe.
yeah, this was probably, you know, my grandparents were making this in the 70s and 80s. So this was probably before Dory
even,
was.
Yeah,
we all knew
Dory
who Dory was.
Greenspan. Okay, that one's
yeah,
no shot.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for a million for taking a few minutes to tell us your story. If you want to read it online, you can go to the Seattle Times or the Washington Post.
I'll post it online on our Facebook page, too, at Hot Stove Radio on Facebook.
Right.
And we hope to have you back. Let's do some more mysteries. I like this. It's super fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you so much, Becky.
And if you ever run into Tom Fietzma from the food column back there, tell him I said hi. I never see him.
I will do. I talk to him all the time.
All right. Up next, Gloria is going to be here from Street Talk Outreach Program. She's the coordinator for Teen Feed. And we got another whole hour. So stay with us here at the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. And we're back. It's hour number two of the Hot Stove Society Show on Cairo Radio. Madeline is here. Chef Terry has got the day off. And my wife joined us at Terry's mic here. Welcome, Jackie Cross.
Hello, everybody.
This is 2 weeks in a row, or 3 weeks in a row, that you've been on the show. This is a big deal.
Our representing from Prosser.
The farm must be in winter mode, is all I'm saying.
Representing Eastern Washington here.
Yay.
That's right. Farms in winter mode. We got Gloria Antonio here with us for the first segment, and up after that, Finger Foods, and Xiao Qing Chao is going to be here with her new book, and of course, going to wrap this hour up with Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. So stay with us. We're having a ball.
Hi, Gloria. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for the invitation.
No problem. You know, Tom, we love the organization Teen Feed. As you mentioned at the beginning of the hour, our wonderful chef, Nate Crave from the Palace Kitchen, really got us first involved with this. And then one of my favorite events that I miss doing down at Cuoco, we did about three big spaghetti Teen Feed spaghetti dinners, big fundraiser there every December. And, you know, what was awesome is it was a great price. Everybody would come in for a spaghetti dinner, Caesar salad, some garlic. Like
right?
bread, all you can eat. It was awesome. But the best part was we did a fun raffle, and you would get a raffle ticket if you brought items for Teen Feed. And especially during the winter, whether it's coats and tarps and different hand warmers and gloves and lots of different things, it was so fun to collect just giant boxes from our amazing group of supporters for the event. So we got to know the Teen Feed organization. This year, obviously, we can't do that big gathering, but we're going to help in other ways. Your business partner, Eric Tanaka, is going to do a big ham dinner for 90 people, and he's going to be dropping that off for Teen Feed folks this Christmas, which will be nice. But Gloria, give us a quick background about Teen Feed and tell us what you do there for the organization.
Yeah, of course. So we have been in the University District since 1987. We started out as some nurses at UW-Med. Noticed that young folks were coming into the ER really malnourished, and so they started going out on the streets and handing out food and handing out warm items and making sure that when, you know, the cold hit and whenever they needed to go into the ER, they were more nourished than they were before. And so we have kept that till this day. I am the head of outreach, and so I lead the teams out into the university district, and we're slowly expanding out into the greater Seattle area. And I make sure that I still have that same motto in my head, that I give folks whatever they might need, whether that might be food, a hot beverage, hand warmers, socks. And I invite anybody I can to our dinners, our nightly dinners that we have not stopped even through the pandemic. We are open all year long. As you said, every holiday we are also open, and we are so lucky to have you guys coming in for Christmas to do a really nice meal for us. So thank you so much.
Well, Madeline, didn't you say that even some of the chefs that don't work with us anymore are joining up with Eric to make this dinner?
Yeah, absolutely. He was able to do a quick call. And again, as years pass, traditions can continue. Everybody really chimed in and wanted to help as much as possible. It's a beloved organization to a lot of those chefs. So yeah. We've done a lot. And I think it's going to be a delicious ham dinner is what I predict.
Well, that would be my guess. Eric is a fine chef.
It will be good, yeah.
We have loved your guys' dinner every year that you guys have done Christmas for us, so I don't see how this year will be any exception. I feel like it will be even more delicious.
I love it. And I know that Janine was able to send over some information. Can you tell us how the Amazon Smile wish list works for people who might want to lend their support for the organization this year?
Yeah, so when you go to the Teen Feed website, which is just teenfeed.org, you will have a front header that kind of just says, donate, support our work on the streets, and you just click on that, and our Amazon Smile link is about halfway down through the page. You just click on it, and it goes to your own Amazon account, and it kind of shows you all the things that we are wishing for, which is a lot of hand warmers, socks, granola bars, things like that, and you just click it, and it sends it to our office. Kind of amazing how technology works now.
That is cool.
That is amazing.
It's so easy.
So easy. Just click the button of what you think is in your price range, what you think that we might need, and it goes straight to our office door.
And it really is just about, you know, at the end of the day, I know our team, a lot of young chefs that we had kids, and just feeling like helpless when you drive along the streets and not really sure what to do for all those people that are out there on the streets. And this is just one more way to lend a helping hand that I think by going through an organization like Teen Feed, you know it's going to get to the right people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, definitely. We have been handing out things like crazy, a lot of warm jackets, a lot of blankets, a lot of hand warmers, especially on Monday when the snow kind of surprised us. A lot of folks were cold, and we were able to help them out and get them a little bit warmer.
And I know you mentioned granola bars. Are there certain types of packaged foods that are ideal to donate and things like that if people have some of that at home too?
Yeah, so granola bars, any kind of granola bars, we are more than happy to take. Hot chocolate packets, apple cider packets, anything that's a little bit more nutritious, we will take.
Okay.
Awesome.
And then Gloria, can you, we have about 2 minutes, can you give us like maybe one success story, what, where you guys have helped get somebody maybe around a corner, turn the bend, so to speak, and get them off the streets?
Yeah, I actually was just thinking about this. I had a client who hadn't been at dinner for a couple of, like, maybe 2 months, and I was getting a little worried. And just last week, he Facebook messaged me and said, Gloria, thank you so much for being there, for always listening to me every night and just supporting me the whole way. I have now reunited with my family in the East Coast, and I have a job, and I'm finally reunited with my daughter, and I'm just so grateful for you guys.
Oh, I love that. So this gives me goosebumps.
Somebody, this was somebody who came to our dinners every night and, you know, was always the nicest kid ever, would always just be so grateful for anything we gave him.
I don't know what to say. Can't top that, can you?
I know. It's the best.
Well, Gloria, thanks for taking a few minutes to tell us about Teen Feed and all of you listening. It doesn't take much. You can go on this Amazon Smile on their site.
Yep.
And, you know, $5 worth of oat bars or $5 worth of, you know, socks or gloves or whatever. So.
And it's so nice you don't have to wait in line to donate. You see all these long lines all over the place to donate. This makes it very easy. So you can visit www.teenfeed.org. That's where you can learn how to donate. They also have the Amazon wish list link right there halfway through the page. There's a lot of other events that you can support Teen Feed all hopefully next year. Maybe we'll do another spaghetti dinner out at Ballard or something
fun
like that.
Hopefully.
So.
Thank you, Gloria Antonio, from the Seattle Street Talk Outreach Program Coordinator for Teen Feed.
Yeah.
All right.
Happy holidays. Thank you guys so much. Thank you.
Happy holidays. Bye-bye.
Up next, let's make some finger foods for our holiday passionate get-togethers with two of us.
Countdown to 2021.
Countdown to 2021. On Cairo Radio, it's Not Stone Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show. It's time for some New Year's thoughts. Getting ready for the big New Year's Eve and New Year's Day holiday. And we're going to talk a little bit about finger foods. I'm Tom Douglas. I'm joined by Madeline Dow over there on the production mic. And then Jackie Cross is going to join
us. Hello, everybody.
So finger foods for New Year's.
Yeah.
I have one in my mind because I just made it yesterday. And it was really good. And so I'm just going to say it.
Great. That's wonderful.
It was the best bite I had yesterday.
Ooh.
So I had, I was making some Wellingtons. You know what a Wellington is? Like a beef Wellington or a Sam Wellington where you do salmon or beef on the inside and wrap it in a pastry. But it's typically got a lot of layers of stuff in it, too. And so I was making that, but vegetarian version, not vegan, but vegetarian version with puff paste. And I roasted chunks of celery root to be kind of the basis, the centerpiece of my Wellington. And then on the bottom, I put braised leeks, and then my chopped mushroom duxelle, my shiitake mushroom duxelle, which is cooked with shallots and mushrooms and herbs and blah, blah, blah. So leeks layer, mushroom layer, roasted celery root layer, and then a layer of garlic spinach. And then I wrapped it and served it with a coriander and pickled pear yogurt. And you can make these as big as you want. I made a whole sheet, big size version that would feed four people. I made individual ones that would feed a full person for dinner. Or you wrap them super small and make them as little walk around, stand up, finger, cocktail appetizers. So there.
I think
you
that
went
sounds
to the New York
delicious.
Times. I just went to my own pea brain.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I like it. I think that people are going to be in smaller gatherings this year for New Year's Eve. Our countdown to 2021 will be small and or outdoors, perhaps, mm-hmm. with a larger gathering. So I think past finger foods is trending online, so to speak. So there's a lot of options out there and wanted to know what might be delicious for all different things.
Well, I agree with you. And that's but that, to me, certainly everyone's going to be outdoors, unless you're just by yourselves.
Yeah.
I think the legal limit is five people or something like that in our state.
Yeah.
So, Jackie, do you have a favorite... Jackie Cross is the farmer in chief. We're actually married, but she
for 37 years.
She runs
doubt.
The farm over in Prosser, Washington. And do you have a favorite past finger food appetizer?
Well, not to be too elitist, but I do love a little bit of caviar on some Bellini. That's pretty darn delicious as a past app.
So can you pass a little buckwheat pancake like that?
Yeah, for sure. If you make the pancakes, they're, you know, a little bit bigger than a quarter with a little bit of dollop of caviar, mm-hmm. and then maybe topped with a teeny bit of sour cream or creme fraiche, something like that. That makes perfect little pass around. Mm-hmm. And you can really stretch caviar out for a lot of finger food blini in that way also.
I do. Also, Tom, I like your toasties. You know, we did all those fun toasties at the Dahlia Lounge back in February, mm-hmm. and they're so versatile and easy. They make great little kind of champagne snacks or cocktail mm-hmm. snacks, and you can do pretty much anything with those.
If I were to do those, I'd go down to Le Panier in the market and get a nice, one of those skinny, long French baguettes, right, and just slice it lengthwise, mm-hmm. so there's a top and a bottom, and then I'd just make a bunch of them. It's almost like making pizza, having a pizza party where you put out all the ingredients and give each person a crust, and then you can just make your own.
A little toppings bar.
Yeah, a little toppings bar, a little cheese bar, but it has to be melty cheese.
Yeah.
And then Jackie has this really nice Krupps, like a panini press.
Mm, yep.
And that is a fun thing to give everyone. You're in there, you just pop it in, and that could work indoors or outdoors on an extension cord, and I have a little toasty cheese sandwich with lots of fillings, like broccoli, spicy broccoli rabe, or delicious roast turkey, or you know, some sort of little sandwich type filling.
That sounds very good. I like that.
Also, nothing wrong with a little gougere. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They make a delicious little past app and stuff, and you can flavor them up with different herbs or different spices in them, or just keep them as the plain, delicious, cheesy ones. It's very simple to make.
Yeah, see, those intimidate me. I'm intimidated by the idea of making something like that.
A pâte à choux?
Yeah.
That's the first thing I made in home ec class when I was in high school.
It's super easy.
It seems like I'm going to mess it up.
I think that's why they make it your first thing in home ec, because it seems out there, and yet it's hard to mess up. And so I think it gives you, you know, right away that you have buy-in to the idea that, hey, this is going to be a fun class. And next thing you know, they're trying to teach you how to sew.
Your confidence in the kitchen.
Exactly.
is where
well,
it
you
stems
sent
from.
Me an article in the New York Times by Melissa Clark, who I don't know if you realize this, but before you started producing the show, she'd been on our show maybe half a dozen times over the years. She's a great interview if you ever want to call her. But she had some ideas of some things that would really go well. One is, as I've talked about for the last month in my classes here at the Hot Stove, is like a prosciutto, a ham. Mm-hmm. But go ahead and get the ham stand and the knife and let it, you know, let that be part of the decor. And that's an easy thing to walk around, and you walk up and you slice a ham. She also, Jackie, did the caviar, but she did ikura, which is the salmon eggs that are cured, and you put it on top of yogurt or sour cream or something, and then you just make homemade potato chips, and you've got kind of a walk around.
Yeah, it's perfect with potato chips. That little salty, fishy hit is delicious.
Yum. And as we heard earlier in the show with Brian from the Fat Cork, Brut champagne is really good with these kind of highly salty, ocean-centric flavors like Olympia oysters or. And there's another something that would be, I've been shucking so many oysters down at Seatown over the last 2 months that oysters on the half shell is something that you can set up a beautiful buffet. They come with their own plate, right? The half shell is their own plate. And you simply just have a nice little sea bar for people. If you're outside, you don't even have to add ice. Right now it's so cold out there, but no, it's beautiful. And you can make individual little things, little plates or on the half shell. So a little sea bar is a fun place to go.
Yeah.
How about pizza? Is it too every day these days? You know, people are eating a lot of pizza. Domino's is having a record year. Caesar's, you know, all the Pizza Hut. Everyone's having a record year. Pagliacci's having a record year. Maybe pizza just has to go away on New Year's and we have to work harder and do something else.
Blasphemy.
Even Serious Pie is having a record year. And we're closed.
No. I was trying to look up the, you know, I think what would be great for New Year's Eve instead of a full-blown pizza is there, I'm trying to look up the word, the thin sort of cheesy flatbread that Loretta had at her wedding. We did it with Ceres pie. You can probably do it at home. You can pick up those Ceres pie shells at Met Market. And it's just a super thin layer of olive oil, salt, and then just a tiny bit of Parmesan and some garlic and a little bit of red chili flake. Ooh, I think I ate about my weight in those at Loretta's wedding because they're just light. It's not, it's, and it's something easy that you can eat with your hand. You know, it's not,
it's not committing to like a sausage pizza or something like that. It's more of a snacky.
Yeah. But you can order those at Pagliacci. We typically add one to our order and pick on it before we all sit down. And, then we don't eat the rest of our pizza, but it's just delicious. It's, you know, again, it's that simple cheese, garlic, olive oil, salt kind of combination that makes it easy.
Uh-huh.
Perfect finger food.
And then don't forget stuffed mushrooms. I know they're old-fashioned, but they're really good. I take just a bulk Italian sausage, mix it with breadcrumbs and this and that, you know, little cheesy bits, maybe a little mozzarella, fontina, provolone, whatever, and then stuff the mushrooms, bake them. The thing is you really do have to let them cool a bit for them to be finger food.
Yeah.
And then you just pop them in. All finger food, though, it comes with good cocktail napkins. Don't forget that part. That's good. Those little bamboo forks, right? Perfect. Even though it says finger food, they're still nice to have a little something to hold on to. All right, up next is Xiaoqing Chow. We're going to talk about her new book, Chinese Vegetable Soul Food, on Cairo Radio. It's the Hot Stove Society Show, 97.3 FM. Welcome back. It's the Hot Stove Society Show here on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. Chef Jackie Cross, Farmer Chef Jackie Cross, is in the kitchen.
Lovely to be here.
Sitting in for Mr. Terry. Maddie is on the mic over there producing the show. Sean is doing the audio. And, of course, our friend Sean, Don't Call Me Del Torre, is back in the studio editing the show when it comes up. Xiaoqing is joining us. She has she's one of our instructors here at the Hot Stove. She does classes here. She also, after reach and grab it, has her first book called Chinese Soul Food, and it's been a big seller here and a big seller for her around the country, and has a new version of soul food coming out. It's called Vegetarian Chinese Soul Food. So, Xiaoqing, welcome to the Hot Stove Show.
Thanks, Tom. It's so good to be here with you.
Are you? Are we your first stop on book tour?
Well, first radio.
Okay, good.
How about that?
It's good to be first at something. Yeah, exactly. Tell us about your new book.
This one is definitely all about vegetables, and except for the egg chapter, it's mostly naturally vegan dishes. Mm-hmm. But I love eggs too much to have made it a strictly vegan cookbook. The idea is just to share different, straightforward, easy Chinese recipes for getting more vegetables into your meal plan.
I applaud that as a farmer.
And we love farmers. Farmers are my favorite people, I think.
Hey, Xiaoqing, tell us just a little bit about your background and how you got into cooking. And I know that, I believe your folks ran a restaurant somewhere in the mid-America. Do I remember
it's
that correctly?
It's true. Yeah. It's true. We after we moved to the States, you know, it's a typical immigrant story. My parents couldn't do what they did as professionals back in Taiwan, and they needed to make a living, and somehow ended up in the restaurant business in Columbia, Missouri, which is about halfway between St. Louis and Kansas City in Missouri. And it was the University of Missouri that led us there, but what kept us there was, you know, wanting to make a better life. They kicked off a little mom-and-pop Chinese restaurant, so I know that life very well. And you know, had it for 20-some years. And, hey, we fed a lot of people, and it pays for my college education, so I'm not complaining.
No, not a bit. And so vegetables. Now, your Chinese soul food, there's so many dumplings, and that's some of the classes that you teach here, lots of dumpling classes.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, you have some coming up the end of or in January and February. I don't want to get into those too much yet. Let's see. You have potstickers in January, wonton two ways. In February, you have potstickers and veggie stir fry. But tell us about this next edition of Xiaoqing Chow, which is vegetable-oriented. Give us some of your favorite dishes.
Well, it's For me, it's less about a specific dish, but more about techniques. So stir fries, of course, are my go-to. You know, I work full time in addition to all the stuff that I do in food. And it's the same as any other working parent. You know, you get to the end of the day and you're like, what am I going to make for dinner? And then if you have any picky eaters in your house, and I have my two kids are opposite eaters. They, you know, like put them together and they're the perfect eater. And so stir fries give me the flexibility to have a little bit of something for everybody, but still make it feel like it's all one meal. And most stir fries are intentionally meant to be quick. And what I wanted to do with this book, so the first book was more like an on-ramp into everyday Chinese home cooking. And then this one is just to give people more options for ways to prepare vegetables. So I don't just do stir fries, but steaming, there are more vegetarian dim sum, there's soups, things like that. So the recipes run the gamut, but really it's about giving people the tools and the know-how to just think about vegetables as just an intrinsic part of dinner. And it's not just a side dish, right? Like we too often think of veg as the side where it could play just as an important role, as some meaty dish. So for me, it's just to say, hey, here's how you can incorporate more veg into mm-hmm. your day. Mm-hmm. And it's not saying, oh, this is a health kick. Like this should just be a part of your meal.
You know, I let's talk about the wok for a second. You say stir fry, and you know, obviously you can do it in a Western pan. You can do it in a wok. So what should people know about wok cooking that make them more successful?
The key thing is if you are going to get a wok, you should get a more traditional carbon steel wok that, and it should be, like if you have a flat top stove, get a flat bottom wok. If you have a gas stove that can accommodate a round bottom wok, then you can do that. So important is to get the carbon steel. And then the other piece of it is, don't think that you have to spend a whole lot. In Chinese cooking, we don't put the highest value in the piece of cookware itself. The cookware is very affordable, right? Mm-hmm. So you really shouldn't spend more than $35-$40 for a wok. Most good size, like 14-inch woks are in the $30 range. I think the most I've ever spent on a wok is about $50. So it's not, in the scheme of things, it's not that expensive. And then the best way to take care of it is simply to cook from it, right? Like if you cook up from it only occasionally, then it's going to start to look kind of gross. But if you get a wok and you use it, the act of cooking and using, the oil, just the different types of cooking, that actually helps to season your wok and makes it a little bit more naturally nonstick, right? So don't get any with any funky surfaces. Don't get stainless steel. Don't get any of those. You know, don't spend $200 on something. Like save your $200 for a Le Creuset Dutch oven if you want, but don't spend that money on the wok.
Mm-hmm. And if it's carbon, you just kind of rinse it out, use your brush, but you don't use a steel wool or anything like that. You rinse it out and then wipe it with oil, put it back on the stove and heat it up and dry it out. And exactly ready to go.
And like over time, like the main wok that I use at home, you know, now I don't even really have to heat it to dry it. Like it's so, the patina on it is so great that I can just rinse it out, just use one of those little scrubber sponges, not steel wool, but just scrubber sponge, mm-hmm. Get out any of the stuff that's in there and then dry it with a towel and then just hang, I hang it up on my, I have a pot rack. I hang it up on my pot rack and it's fine. But that's, you know, I cook a lot. So.
Right. And then, so you're nice cooking, patina. You have two kids and you, and Eric and yourself. So you're cooking for four. And
for
I think
five,
this is
my mom.
Oh, and your mom
my
too.
My mom lives with us.
And
yeah,
I think this
yeah.
is the hard thing for the home cook to figure out, which is if you try to cook for five. Oops, I only have 2 minutes. I'm not sure you can answer this. If you try to cook for five in a wok, you have to break it down almost to, you know, two or three probably wok cookings. You can't cook for all five at the same time in the wok.
No, I always make two or three dishes for a meal.
Right.
So it's either two stir fries and a soup or three stir fries, but they're almost all pretty straightforward. And you prep all your ingredients all at once and then system cook each one, maybe with a light rinse between cooking. But right. all of that I can do within 30 minutes.
Well, the important part is, I guess what I was trying to get at is that if you put all those ingredients in your wok at one time, then you're going to have a steam. You're going to have a. You're not going to have a stir fry. You're going to have a boil.
That's right. You don't want to overcrowd your wok.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
Thank you, Xiaoqing, for clarifying. Again, Xiaoqing's classes almost always sell out here at the Hot Stove. So if you want to get some information, go to hotstovesociety.com. And January 16th is pot stickers. January 31st is wontons, wonton two ways. The 6th of February is pot stickers. And the 27th of February is veggie stir fry. And you can. When can people buy your new book?
It is available for pre-order, and the release date is January 19th. Okay. So, you know, you can order it now, and if you want to get a signed copy, you would have to either get it from Bookwarder. Otherwise, you know, I'm happy to send book plates.
Okay. And then you could also save it until we get back in the kitchen here at the Hot Stove and do it in person here with Xiaoqing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Absolutely. I look forward to that day.
Me too.
Me
now,
too.
I hear you're going to stay with us for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia.
I am.
Good.
I'm a little anxious, but I'm going to do it.
All right. Well, you got this. If it's Madeline has anything to do with it, I'm going to lose.
That's true.
All right, and Jackie, you're going to join us for trivia?
I'm here. I'm
okay.
Mm-hmm.
When we come back, it's Food for Thought Tasty Trivia on the Hot Stove Society Show, Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We are back in the Hot Stove Society. It's Chef Tom Douglas, joined by Jackie Cross and Madeline Dow. And Xiaoqing Zhao is going to stay with us and be one of our victims here on Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. This tasty trivia is brought to you by Rub With Love, handcrafted, versatile rubs, sauces, and mustards that add a flavorful kick and a whole lot of love to just about any meat, fish, or vegetable. And yes, we make them at our warehouse in Ballard. Feel free to go to TomDouglas.com to see all of our products or go to any of your favorite grocery stores, Bartell Drugs, online, you name it. Everyone's got Rub With Love available. Okay, Madeline, what do you got for us today?
All right. So our prize package from the wonderful team at Rub With Love has a signed copy of I Love Crab Cakes written by Tom Douglas.
Wow.
Ooh. Wow. Amazing. Mm-hmm. Along with a jar of my favorite spice rub, the veggie rub, and our crab cake mix to go along perfectly with all the crab cakes that you're going to make from the cookbook. So,
you know, when I've been shucking oysters down at Seatown, I have my rub rack right behind me, and it's hard to convince people they could use veggie rub on anything.
Oh, I know.
People
but
buy
I love
rubs
it.
Thinking, you know, just with the veggie rub, it has to go on vegetables. It can go on anything.
Yeah,
all right.
It's perfect. So we are playing for listener Bob Wagner. You know, he commented on your Pop Pop Solstice recipe that we posted there, and so wanted to give him a lovely prize package for cooking in the new year. So we are playing. We'll do three rounds of five questions each, and whoever loses gets to pay for the shipping to send this prize package to Bob.
Okay.
So thanks for staying and playing with us, Xiaoqing. We will have Jackie go first with her top five questions, and then
the pressure.
Xiaoqing will go second, and Tom will round out our last show of 2020 here, a last trivia question. So, all right, Miss Jacqueline, what is the name of the pan used for stir frying in China?
Oh, give me a break.
Let's see.
we wrote these before. I wrote these before you guys started talking about the thing.
I think that might be a walk.
That is correct. Well done. Okay, Google just released its top three searches for how to, and the third one was how to make whipped what?
Well, you can't whip sourdough, so then
not yet.
Food trend of 2020 whipped. Wow, I don't know.
Coffee. Whipped coffee was a big food trend in the springtime. Wow. People wanting to make whipped coffee.
I never missed that one.
Never heard of it before.
Well, it comes in third after how to make hand sanitizer and how to make a mask. So, very popular item there. All right, you might need to phone a friend here. Again, I wrote these with Amy in mind. These two craveable items from beloved Disneyland made Google's top five searches for top recipes in 2020. What two recipes were they?
Churros.
The Disney churros and Dole Whip. Yeah, can you believe it? People wanted to make these Disney recipes at home. They couldn't go to Disneyland themselves, and they wanted to make it there.
You want to tell our listeners where you spent your entire 4 years of college?
I know I did. I was in the shadow of Disneyland at beloved Chapman University. Yeah. I miss it greatly, as does my colleague here, Amy, who is a Disney fanatic. Yeah, exactly. She has a Disney credit card.
I've only been there once, and that's why I didn't get it.
All right. This popular round cake signifies the circle of life to lucky eaters. What is it? Round cake.
Round.
Is it Chinese?
Like a bundt round?
A bundt cake is correct. Well done.
Wow.
Okay, your last question. Three varieties of grapes are used to produce champagne. Name two.
Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
That is correct. Well done. You got, three out of five correct.
Okay.
That's pretty good. All right, Shaoxing.
She phoned a friend.
She got a lifeline from Amy over here. All right. Are you ready, Shaoxing?
As ready as I'll ever be.
Okay. Is quinoa a rice, grain, or vegetable?
Grain.
That is correct. Well done. One of the
final answer.
Things. What do people in southern United States eat for good luck on New Year's Eve?
Black eyed peas.
That is correct. Two for two. All right. Your third question. Super long noodles are thought to bring what in the new year?
Long life. Oh my gosh.
That's
correct.
That's
probably not fair. Yeah.
Okay, question four. Which spirit is fermented and distilled from sugarcane?
I feel like I should know this.
Absolutely, especially if you have a rum punch.
Oh, Tom. Giving it away.
Rum?
That is correct. Four for four. He cannot complain now if he loses. All right. Jackie mentioned this earlier in the show about her favorite finger food. What is the salted roe of sturgeon called?
Caviar.
That is correct. Five for five.
Nice job.
Keeping
nice
our trend
job.
Here with our guests. Okay, Tom, you have five questions. Are you ready?
Oh, boy.
Yep.
What kind of smoked fish is a kipper?
A herring.
Correct. That was not too bad. All right. In Spain and Mexico, 12 of what is eaten at midnight on New Year's Eve for good luck? I did not know this.
Little children.
Surprisingly, that is not the answer. I know that's what you would eat, but
12 of what in Spain and Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
Chili peppers.
Nope, it is grapes. When the clock strikes midnight, people try to eat 12 grapes as quickly as possible because each grape will bring luck for the 12 months ahead.
Well, perfect.
Seems like a choking hazard there.
It does seem like a choking hazard.
If you live, you'll have good luck.
You'll have good luck. Although there is a great recipe
I never heard of that.
I hadn't either. There's great recipes for Prosecco-soaked grapes online that I will post as well because that was what intrigued me. Okay, Tom, cabbage is a symbol of what for good luck foods?
Cabbage is a symbol of sauerkraut for good luck foods.
Nope.
Okay.
It's a symbol of...
I got it wrong. What?
Money.
Really? Oh, yeah. You got a bunch of cabbage.
Yeah. Greens of any sort represent wealth and money. So serve them up like a wada-build in a stuffed cabbage recipe. Isn't that one of your favorites?
I had it for dinner last night. Stuffed cabbage rolls. With a little genmai rice and ground pork, and they were so good.
Oddly, it hasn't brought
that
you luck
good.
To this round,
yeah.
So that's weird. How many bottles of champagne does a Nebuchadnezzar contain?
20.
That is correct. Well done.
You know why I know that? Because you drank out of a Nebuchadnezzar at my daughter's wedding.
It was delicious. Yes.
It was delicious.
Might have had my two bottles worth. Perhaps. Okay, this tradition was started by victorious Napoleonic troops who celebrated by opening bottles of wine with their swords while on horseback. What is that called?
It's started by who? Victorious?
Victorious troops in the Napoleon era.
Oh, I thought you said Victoria's troops, and I was going to say. Okay, sabering.
That is correct. I wish we could saber a bottle right now.
Oh, it's the nacho end of the time, though.
You had to get one nacho pun
one
in
nacho
there. All right, it looks like Jackie is going to be paying for the shipping for our lovely winner, who will receive a jar of Rub With Love crab cake mix, veggie rub, and a signed book of I Love Crab Cakes by Tom Douglas. Yay. Thank you, Xiaoqing, for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. It was fun.
If you want to be part of the show, you can join the community on Facebook at Hot Stove Society Radio Show. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. The show is produced by our team, Madeline Pennington, her last show, and Amy Richardson, the new producer. Sound and production by Sean McFadden, and editor is Sean Don't Call Me Del Torre. Also, remember, if you missed any episode of our Hot Stove Society show on Cairo 97.3 FM, you can listen via podcast. Just subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app. Thanks for listening.